This is Tracy Hales Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM. Today I'm talking to Michael Shihashi, the writer of Native Americans in Comic Books, A Critical Study. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was really impressed with your Native Americans in Comic Books, A Critical Study. I had to sit at the library and read it because it's in the reference section.
Well, I'm so glad you read it. Thank you very much.
Oh, it was very in-depth. I was impressed with the work that went into gathering all that information.
Yeah, it took a lot of work. And then, as you know, any sort of writing is an endeavor in itself. So it took a lot to write it as well.
How long did it take you to do the whole project?
20, 30 years? No, I'm teasing. It started out as a very small, it was supposed to be, around 10-page paper in undergraduate college, ended up being about a 30-page paper with no illustrations.
Wow.
And it just sort of sat in my drawer for a few years after I graduated from the University of Oklahoma, and just sort of sat there, and I knew there was no first source, and I knew it needed to be out there and be available for other people. So I probably full tilt started writing and creating and interviewing and collecting comics in preparation for it, I would say probably in late 2003, early 2004 probably, and finally published in its final form, I think, in 2008, like in the summer. So it took a good number of years to get there.
And it's a beautiful book, too.
Yeah, I was very pleased with the final product. So
you should be.
Thank you.
Now, the thing is, it says Native Americans in comic books, but it covers more than that.
It does. It covers a little bit more. For me, I have a huge background in history and in pop culture. So a lot of that's, TV, video games, social media. So even before we had social media back then. And so I couldn't help but sort of see how the comic book and the depiction and illustrations therein really touched on other genres as well.
Right.
For instance, video games and other things.
And way back in first black and white TV, even.
Exactly, right. Yeah, even those things, those ideas and themes we see prevalent, like you said, in TV, Lone Ranger and Tonto and some of the others. So.
That's the exact one I was going to mention, too. Tonto, who I grew up with.
I did, too. That was a big one for me. And, you probably have this same thing. Growing up with it, that was our hero.
Exactly.
That was the one we looked up to.
Right.
So it was interesting to pick apart that character and dissect it.
And you did it very sensitively. I have to say there's been so many scourges on Tonto. You handled it really openly and looked at both sides of it very fairly, I thought.
Well, I appreciate that. As I kind of mentioned, it was kind of close to my vest. Tonto was, my hero growing up. And so I had to, as I knew more and more about the stereotypes there, and I had to really dig deep. And quite frankly, seeing the comic, he had on his own, the spinoff from the Lone Ranger and Tonto comic, he had his own, and seeing the depiction there of how his internal thoughts and dialogue was quite eloquent, but his external sort of Tonto-esque speak didn't show that, was a real revelation. And I wouldn't have known that had I not done this research. So I was really thrilled to learn that along the way.
So do you think that there is a change in depicting Native Americans in media?
I definitely think we're on a good path. Are we there yet? No. But there's so much more interest. And case in point, like I mentioned, when the book came out in 2008, that's quite a number of years ago. This is coming up on 11 years now. From the time I created it and wrote it and authored it and published it, there have been so many new Native American and Indigenous and First Nation, not only characters, but comic book writers, comic book enthusiasts. There's Indigenous Con or Indigenous X, here in Albuquerque, as well as in other areas, I think Denver and Australia. So the idea, there's very, very obviously not only interest from a readership and a community, but there's actual Native Indigenous people doing it now, which at the time I wrote the book, you'll notice there's not a whole lot of representation there. I tried to find those I could, but there's a lot more now, so I'm very excited about that. Right. No, you know, because of the book, I'm very fortunate. I made those good contacts of people, actual Native people working, Indigenous people working within the comic book industry. And it's fantastic to have that network of people and know them on a personal level. But also, I've been able to sort of step into the comic industry thanks to them and their encouragement. People like Aragon, Star, and Lee Francis, and many others along the way saying, hey, you know, you wrote this book. Maybe you should also do this. And so,
great.
Fortunate enough to work with Alternate History Comics, Ah Comics, out of Canada. Mm. We produced the Moonshot series, Indigenous comic collection of writers and authors, so it's very cool to be a part of that.
That's not even your day job.
Right, yeah. I do, you know what, I do a lot of this stuff on the side, and having a day job allows me to do that stuff on the side. You know,
right.
I pay the bills, but then, you know, I get to talk about comics and video games and Native issues and Native representation on the side, so I'm very fortunate in that respect.
But your position as creative technologist does, I'm sure it informs your work in the writing area.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, and like I mentioned, I'm very fortunate. I marry all these ideas together. So a lot of times mm-hmm. when I speak in my consultancy at Alternative Media, I'll talk about comics, I'll talk about e-learning or app development or software development, but I also am able to talk about Indigenous ideas and themes and comic book creation and offer workshops here and there. So it's been a really great journey, and I'm very fortunate because I'm able to speak that language. I have a film degree as well, so a lot of this overlaps there. And so the idea, the language, how we communicate in comics overlaps quite a bit with how we communicate in e-learning and training and mm-hmm. just in communication in general. So I use that in my tool set quite a bit.
So in this day and age, there's been an issue come up about the problem and accusations of cultural appropriation.
And that's been the problem with comics all along, right? Like
right.
outsiders have written for us. And,
right.
and I think you have a fantastic point, which is we also need, being part of the internal group, make sure that our subgroups are well represented and we're not just writing as another tribe or another tribal entity, that we either have some direct experience with it or we have someone helping us with that, you know, co-writing it with us, co-creating. And I think that's a very important point.
Yes, I think that's really important to make sure not only that each tribe is represented, but that it's represented fairly.
Fairly and accurately.
And
right?
accurately,
so we
yes.
want, yeah. Especially, you know, when we, so a lot of these comics you'll see really celebrate Native culture, and especially if they have Indigenous writers, but maybe they're showing aspects of material culture of historic value, you know, meaning like maybe it's a historical cultural item, you know, case in point, you know, like beadwork or dress or clothing
yes.
or what is. So it's important, as you mentioned, not only to be fair, but to be accurate in that and understand what that cultural, what's imbued within that cultural artifact or that item that you're seeing. And so depicting it visually correctly, treating it with respect, you won't know that until you're part of that group or have someone, you know, along the way helping you and co-creating that with you.
I think it's even more than research, don't you?
Exactly, because you can do all the research. So, for instance, you know, I'm not Japanese, and I could do all the research on Japan and then the culture, but I am not Japanese. I'm not part of the internal culture. There's going to be something I miss, just quite, or misrepresent, right?
Exactly.
It definitely has to be someone from within speaking with their voice.
So I guess the encouragement would be for more people to get creative and express their creativity and publish their creativity.
Exactly. And that's one of the quote-unquote soapboxes I have, not only with my book, but with sort of my day-to-day activities and daily life, is we Indigenous people and Native Americans, First Nation people, need to do and create and tell our own stories. And no matter what that is, whether it's art, whether it's writing, whether it's comic book creation, working in the film industry, whatever it is, we need to be the ones from our internal group telling these stories. And I absolutely agree it's vital that we do this.
That's a great soapbox. I like
yeah.
it. Yeah. Well, I think that's the counterpoint to the accusations of cultural appropriation. If you don't like what people are writing or represented, then write it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. That, you know, and that's the underlying aspect, right? You know, so we have been, you know, marginalized, misrepresented, all these things stereotyped within these various media. So you're right. Let's get up and take care of this. Let's take care of our business. Let's write our own stories, create our own stories the way we have known they should be. You know, in the case of Tonto and Lone Ranger and Tonto.
Yes.
You know, there has been a reboot of the movie several years ago.
Right.
I wasn't a fan of it. It wasn't a Native character. You know. there's all those issues with Johnny Depp and everything else, and I'm not going to get into that. But what if we had created that? You know, what if we had created the Lone Ranger and Tonto story using our, imbued comedy and our understanding and in-jokes and our winks? That would have been a fantastic journey.
So is that going to happen?
It might. It's a very pleasant surprise to find how much support out there, in quotation marks, there is, and how much need and want to consume really good indigenous stories is out there. And so I'm very pleased that we have that. So to answer your question, maybe someday we certainly have we're in a better place to do that than we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago.
Michael, can you take a few minutes and read for us something out of your book?
You know, as we talk about this, one thing that, you know, we talked about, you know, how long it took and what it took to actually create this book. One thing I like to point out is, you know, you mentioned here's the fix for it or here's my soapbox. And you'll find a lot of my personal voice in this book because my idea was I'm just one Native American reader. I'm just one person. I don't intend to represent an entire culture, not even my entire tribe. I'm just one person, one guy that grew up on a farm reading comics. And here's my take on it. And here's what I found out along the way. So from that, I always like to kind of share the intro or the preface where I talk about, you know, why I did it and what I did it. So many of my earliest memories consist of images of watching the Incredible Hulk transform before my eyes. I remember marveling how beautiful and strong Wonder Woman seemed. Monochromatic images of both Lone Ranger and Tonto galloped through my mind from those thrilling days of yesteryear. Superman protected Metropolis, and I'll have an aside here, both in the television serial from the 1940s. And, of course, as we mentioned, Ultraman battled monsters larger than Mount Fuji, all for my visual enjoyment and entertainment. So television, pop culture, these things served me well as I went forward and explored comic books that I love so much. Given my relative isolation as a youth, again, on the farm, television in many ways served as a surrogate medium to these comic books. I grew up on a farm that was far removed from the urban convenience of a local comic book shop, yet, thanks to these few infrequent trips into town that a friend and I made, a genuine comic book collection blossomed betwixt us two. And over the years, we endlessly passed these rich spoils back and forth, comics, conversation, ideas, sketches, and jokes. And with that, and I'll stop there, that's just a small excerpt, but yes. With that, what I really try to do is put that idea of there's a reason that I feel strongly about this. There was a reason that, as we mentioned, we keep going back to Lone Ranger Tonto, there was a reason that Tonto was both special to me and you know, there was a certain element of why is this character kind of speaking this way? Why is he not the hero?
Mm-hmm.
And so that personal exploration and personal journey really is the thread that woven within this book. And so it was a journey for me, and I'm actually proud that I did it. And it was, and from that, I'm actually happy of all the friends I've made from it and the personal contacts.
And again, I want to reiterate how your opinion, however, it is very, it's well-researched. Your opinions are couched in a lot of good reasoning as well as sound facts.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. I did, that was the, you know, the that was my point or that was my intention.
And right.
I was lucky enough that as I began researching, again, from my university career, I had come across several ways to evaluate data and different representations. One of my degrees is Native American Studies from the University of Oklahoma. And within that, I was lucky to come across Raymond Stedman's work, Shadows of the Indian. And it really goes into not just pop culture, but into old plays for theater, into old, like, dime store, all these looking at across all the board of these different representations. And within that, I sort of plucked and synthesized a criteria. I kind of looked at what this author was looking at and then used it in my own sort of criteria to help me not only give you my personal view, but as you mentioned, balance that with, well, okay, here's what the criteria says,
right.
And here's how we can evaluate that.
And you have a great website under Micah Shiashi. Did I say it right?
Yes, you did. Yeah, Shiashi.
.wordpress.com.
You can get to it quicker just by michaelshiashi.com, and it goes right there. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And you can find there all of your work as well as where to get it. And you have a lot, you have short stories there too, don't you?
Yeah, I've been fortunate to write in different places along the way, whether it's in magazines or journals about how we're portrayed in pop culture, or, as you mentioned, I was lucky enough to, at the University of Central Oklahoma, be a part of a prose collection where I got to sort of celebrate and be a little artistic with how I see myself. And so it was a real, a very short one-page journey about how I kind of see the world. So that was right. That was very nice to be a part of that.
And so do you do your own artwork?
And so I have an MFA, a Master of Fine Art from the Academy of Art University, San Francisco. And so because I didn't come from that art background, I did a lot of rudimentary classes and a lot of that foundational work. So I found I found a lot of artistic expression that I liked and some that I liked and wasn't as good at. For instance, I found during the course of my studies how much I love the tactile feeling of clay and working with it. Oh. I don't get to work with it very much, and sometimes I supplement that by doing a little woodworking. But for the most part, while I've done art, say, for Ink Universe Number Zero from the Indigenous Narratives Collective, or Ink, I was able to do a one-pager there amongst several other people like Roy Boney and Aragon Starr and others. And I did my own art, so I did everything from the sketch work, you know, the initial thumbnails to the inks to the colors and the lettering and all that just on the one-pager. And so I am able to celebrate that art sometimes. Mine art is usually geared a little bit more towards a focus of my MFA, which was 3D modeling for games and simulation. Yeah, I'm able to actually do that on occasion. For instance, you know, we talk about these sort of higher level technologies, and then come to find out maybe that's, you know, you have clients who go, that's fantastic, except I only need, a website or an application or a piece of software. So I'm very lucky when I do get to do those things, create a simulation or 3D model of something. So it's good work when you can get it, so to speak.
So what's next? What do you want to do now?
What do I want to be when I grow up? I'm able to blend all of these aspects of my life into a professional one that allows me to work and live and pay the bills. Lucky enough and fortunate enough to currently have a contract with the Smithsonian's Institution, the National Museum of American Indian, where we're creating comic book illustrations. We're in the middle of that work. You should see some of that online for their NK360, Native Knowledge 360 website. And so we should see some of that. So that's kind of going on currently, which again is still me in that comic book world. I'm very fortunate to be a part of that along with Maria Lopez. She's the main artist on that. And so what's next? Am I going to write another book? I've considered it over the years. It's been, over 10 years since Native Americans and comic books came out. I've considered things like, you know, how we're represented in video games and even smaller to that, you know, how we're represented in some of these secular apps, say for iOS or Apple and Android. So there's some considerations, but I haven't done any of the research therein. There's a lot of people doing a lot of great work. Beth Lepenti, whom I am the co-editor of the Moonshot Volume 3 with, she's doing a lot of great work, not only creating video game-like aspects of Indigenous culture, but is Indigenous herself and is a creator and writer in the video game industry. So it's great to know her. And again, wouldn't have known her had I not written the book. So again, all these fantastic connections and stuff. So I guess the joke is, you know, I've done several different things, but I'm kind of up for anything at this point.
That's great to be open like that. And congratulations on the Smithsonian project.
Well, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I'm very fortunate. It just sort of happened. So I'm very happy it just happened.
Well, it doesn't just happen. You have to have some kudos to get there, right?
Right, some kudos and definitely a lot of legwork and writing and application and hoops to jump through. So
exactly.
Certainly you're correct.
Right. Some
well, as I mentioned, you know, I do find this soapbox, and so I've been on different panels and with fantastic artists and comic book people. I know the Eideljorg in Indiana brought me out several years back to talk on a panel, and so it was fantastic. To see one and talk with one of the artists. And of those discussions, something that keeps coming up is the idea that as Indigenous people, like I keep saying, we need to do our own stuff. We need to create our own things. But sometimes we as young people, we don't hear that message enough. And maybe that's a socioeconomic theme, but yes, let's write our own stories. But let's continue to tell ourselves and our young artists, our young writers, that we can do this, you know?
Right.
That whole idea of sitting down, it's like, as a kid, did anyone tell you, hey, you can be a comic book writer? Well, maybe not. Maybe it's time you tell somebody that. So that's another sort of smaller, not-so-tall soapbox I get on. hey, let's empower ourselves and make sure we empower those people that are just as important or more important, or the future of, you know, our youth. Let's make sure they understand they can be artists. They can create.
Exactly.
And quite frankly, and this sounds like a cliche, but, you know, in our technological age currently, there's no reason we can't allow and put into the hands of our youth these ideas.
That's right.
If you want to be a video game creator, I can give you all these resources that are free or near free. It's within all of our reach. It just takes a little bit of time and dedication to get through it. The subtext there for me is we need to continue to celebrate these stories. So
right.
That those of us that maybe didn't hear it or haven't heard it for the first time, when we do hear it for the first time, it becomes that aha moment for us all. And we can continue to build on that and have better stories and more enriched intertextual ideas together.
And you said you give talks to and presentations to audiences about this?
I do. Like, as I mentioned, sometimes I'm on panels about, natives and comics. Sometimes I do workshops for, you know, tribal entities. When I was in Oklahoma, I would be with the Iowa tribe occasionally and we'd do workshops, or with other people like Aragon Starr and Lee Francis, we would do, local workshops at different libraries. Professionally, as I mentioned, I also talk about comic books as the milieu and the communication effectiveness in order to create better e-learning and training and tell better stories that way. So
right.
I do a lot of different presenting depending on what the slant is there.
Yes, we have been studying here at the college the graphic novel, or in this case, our one book choice was March, which is a graphic nonfiction. It's amazing how that medium can carry so much more than the written word.
Oh, I completely agree. It's one of the reasons I continue to talk about it. And for me, a fantastic read was Scott McCormick's Understanding comic. He has a fantastic idea. He's an artist and has been for many years, where he breaks down why comics are so effective at their storytelling and why we see simple abstract things like a happy face and are able to identify as a face, a circle with two dots and a line or a curved line, and we're able to imbue within that some meaning. And then also why very photorealistic or near photorealistic things sometimes drop off in what's called the uncanny valley. So it's a fantastic read, and I recommend it for anyone interested in comics.
And that was Scott
McCormick. Yeah, it's a must.
The comic book is once again becoming a legitimate form of communication. It's literature, and it wasn't recognized as literature for quite some time.
Right, a good, maybe last half of the last century, you're right. And not only that, but I think also commercially successful. Now, we can argue about whether or not they're, these superhero films that come out from Hollywood are good or bad, but, the honest truth of them, that they're still creating them. There's, more and more comic book created media out there. Netflix just put out their The Umbrella Academy, again,
right.
A smaller comic, but still great stories to tell there. And, just like film, I think, in my opinion, one thing that's fantastic about comics is the ability to blend and juxtapose both the writing part, the creative part, the artistic part. So you have the story arc and you have the visualizations and the illustrations all coming together in one very succinct medium that someone can consume and hopefully get a good story out of.
Right.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for having this discussion. This has been fantastic to talk with you and to meet you. And actually, it's been great to talk about how much of a journey this has been and what I've experienced from it.
That was Michael Shiyashi, who put together Native Americans in Comic Books, a Critical Study. This is Tracy Hales-Vass, right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.